Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
There certainly isn't any reason why we should be using these highly trained professionals that should be going after some horrible people to be investigating conspiracy theories that have been litigated multiple times.
But what I also saw was that Cody Rime took the initiative and was proactive and went down to the Capitol and advocated for not only his family, but his neighbors and his community, essentially his district, his county, and his state.
We remain committed to continuing the work, uplifting workers, protecting women and families, and ensuring that our communities are safe, respected, and heard.
It's about the people, and it's about the struggles, not about one single man. We can't let that destroy what we have built.
This is what we didn't want to see happen, but this is what happens. These are the kind of things that happen when you have an administration that's full of a bunch of yes people.
This bill supports economic opportunity in rural Arizona. The redesignation would help raise Chiricahua's national profile, attract more visitors, and strengthen tourism across southeastern Arizona.
And with me to talk about a pair of ballot measures dealing with school vouchers, the newest member of the state legislature, and more are Chuck Coughlin of High Ground. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning.
And Stacey Pearson of Lumen Strategy. Stacey, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Chuck, there's a new ballot measure dealing with empowerment scholarship accounts, ESAs, otherwise known as school vouchers. And some of what these folks are doing are similar to the one that Save Our Schools Arizona, the teachers union, are trying to put on the ballot. They're collecting signatures for. A big difference, though, is that this new one does not have a cap, an income cap on who is eligible for vouchers, whereas the original one has a cap of $150,000. I wonder if in some way this new initiative is like, would you see it as an acknowledgement maybe by even voucher supporters that some things have to change?
God bless. It's been a while because I've been saying this forever. It's like it's part of the matrix right now. It's part of the way parents make decisions. And it's once Ducey did the universal voucher, remember the history on that too. SOS put that on the ballot.
Yep.
And it was defeated.
Mm-hmm.
And
referred
then they,
it.
Yeah, referred it. They referred it to the ballot. And then they came back and then they did it again and then it passed.
Right.
And so once you get the rule is once you give the public something, you can't take it back. So you then have to accept the reality of that. And then you have to create transparency and how that's done. And the Republicans now are stuck because they won't do the Ronald Reagan thing of, hey, let's defend the taxpayers' money. I mean, Gina got in trouble with Turning Point.
Gina Swoboda.
Yeah. And it's just nuts. So it's a really good thing to put on the ballot because it can be aspirational. But as you say, they're not tripping on themselves about deflecting to the left on their objections to these things.
So, I mean, Stacey, forgive me for asking a cynical question here, but we are talking about politics. I mean, could one look at this as a way to get some of these reforms, changes into the law on vouchers without making Republicans in the legislature do them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there are some universal truths, which I know is almost impossible today in politics, but buying lingerie with tax dollars is bad. I mean, I think
and
we
both
can
of them
all,
would say right, that you can't do that.
Right. And or luxury items, jet skis, trips to Disneyland, all of these things. The issue with the income cap is parents who were already going to send their kids, who had the means to send their kids to private school, church school, send them to Catholic church school in particular, send them to Brophy, send them to Xavier.
Homeschool.
Homeschool.
Yeah.
They shouldn't get their tax dollars refunded. What I find so strange is if I decided tomorrow that, you know what, I really like going to the dump. I don't want to use City of Phoenix's trash service anymore. I would like the City of Phoenix to pay me and I'll take it to the dump. You can't do that because there's a public safety risk, right? If I don't keep up on it, just like if I don't educate my kids well, we've got a problem in society. We'll have rats in Arcadia. Like this is what we should be doing. We should not be pulling this money out of our public education system because it harms the kids that are stuck there.
Right. And I found, I mean, we've done a lot of polling on this type of thing over a long time. One of the things we've found is that there is strong Republican support for a poverty weight for public funding, for education funding. I'm not clear about denying it to everybody, but I know there is enthusiasm to create – I mean, because we all acknowledge it takes more money to teach a poor kid than a wealthy kid because you need more blackboard time, you need more after-school time, you need all more time with that kid. And so it takes more money. I've always found an amazing amount of Republican support, like in the 60s, 65%. To give more money to poor kids.
Well, Chuck, so let me ask you about some of the polling. And this is so new, I'm sure you haven't done polling on it yet. But the conventional wisdom has been in the past that if you have two competing ballot measures,
right,
both of them go down because voters, they get confused. They're not sure. They don't want to vote for the wrong one. Is there a danger that that would be the case on this?
Yeah, there's going to be – I mean, what the legislature's doing is putting a bunch of stuff on the ballot. So how do you distinguish that? Voters get it. If you run a good campaign and you can raise money, that's the big $100 million question is because it costs $5 million to put something on the ballot. I did that in 24 with a constitutional initiative. We needed 425,000 signatures to beat the odds, and we got it done. But, man, that is super, super, super hard.
And I think this policy is so popular, both are going to pass. So what voters are really going to decide is whether or not they want an income cap at 150 grand, whether or not they want wealthy folks to get additional stipends or not. I mean, it's really going to become a class fight.
And if they both pass, the one with the most votes mm-hmm. wins.
In conflicting policy, the one with the most votes
which is
wins.
Interesting. And as we've talked about, some of the provisions are very similar, if not the same, in this new initiative versus the one from Save Our Schools Arizona. So it'd be interesting to see what the arguments are, I think, Stacey, like in these campaigns. Like, do supporters say, hey, vote for both, but make sure to vote for this one?
Right. I mean, I think what I think is going to happen is they'll trot out families driving $500,000 cars and show that those folks do not need assistance to send their kids
to Save
to
Our Schools folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
The initial initiative.
Yeah. They're really going to show some of the highest household incomes that are taking advantage of the system in ways that include airfare to Europe. I would love that. Who wouldn't want a history project to include the Louvre?
It'll be an interesting question because, you know, there's a lot. My daughter went to private school. I paid for that. You know, I didn't have this access to this then. I'm now in that upper tier of voters, older voters. And, you know, that's well over 50% of the electorate is 55 and above. And so if they're like me, then they've never had the opportunity to use taxpayer dollars.
Hmm.
And they may go, yeah, well, why are we doing that now? And so it'll be an interesting question to see how the electorate responds to it.
Yeah, it certainly does seem interesting.
One other flag, the second policy, the one that was dropped after the SOS policy, also does not have a use it or lose it provision. And so the money has to revert back, according to the AEA and the SOS policy. The rest could be a slush fund. I mean, this could – you get $7,500. You're homeschooling your kid. You spend $1,000 on Cheez-Its, you know, and crayons. I don't know.
That's a lot of Cheez-Its.
They're coloring – you're teaching them how to write, you know, color circles. Who knows? But then the parents can keep that money.
Whereas in the Save Our Schools version, that goes back to the state's general fund.
Correct.
All right. So, guys, let's talk.
Clear as mud, right?
Well, it's going to be, I think to both of your points, it's going to be a really interesting campaign to see both how the two sides initiatives frame it, right?
And it's a big issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a front and center issue. So people will dig into it and it'll be interesting to see how people look at it.
Among all the other things that are on the ballot
this
November. Guys, the state legislature got a new member, but really doesn't seem like it changes that much, Chuck. Mr. Rhyme from Rio Verde.
It was an interesting pick on the part of Mr. Galvin because it's his district.
Yeah.
So the other guy that was up was George Califf. George is a nerd pollster guy and very conservative, Very nice guy. I always thought, I think he's going to win the election. So I just reflexively thought, oh, they'll appoint him. Nope. Mr. Rhyme apparently has better social connections within the community, and he appears to be a really nice guy. A little bit different type of Republican than George.
Michelle Ugenti-Reda, too.
Well, yeah. Well, that was never going to happen. That was never going to be.
But both Rhyme and Califf are running for the seat in the fall, right?
Yeah. And, like I said, my money would be on George in that race. So it'll be interesting.
And Michelle, sorry, you mentioned Michelle Ugenti-Reda.
Yeah.
Stacey, it doesn't really change much at the legislature. Cody Rhyme, a Republican, which he had to be because Joseph Chaplick was also a Republican who resigned to run for Congress, said he was joining the Freedom Caucus. So it doesn't seem like all that much has changed at the Capitol, huh?
Yeah, I think it's a push. And I do think it keeps George Califf's dance card clean to be running for reelection. This is not going to be a fun budget process. It's not going to be a fun couple of months. You know, we've got a wrestling match going on at the state capitol to see who's going to get the best quotes in the mail piece against their opponent. I mean, it's performative politics down there right now.
That's all it is. And the question will be, I think there's a theory going on within the Republican caucus that, hey, we can just stay down here and we can just ride this pony till the end of time. And you're like, sort of the end of June when the money runs out, that's probably not going to work very well. And so it'd be interesting to see who blinks first.
Well, it's interesting, Stacey, to your point of like sort of the timing of this appointment. Like if you're appointed now, you don't get to introduce any bills.
No.
You don't get to sort of say your priorities. You're voting on other people's bills and in many years taking difficult votes on a budget.
That's exactly it. I mean, that's a job. Be careful what you ask for in terms of that appointment. I mean, this is – you're coming in cold. You're introducing yourself to members of your caucus. You are going through a budget document that, is 300,000 pages long. I mean, this is – they're going to have to be quick on the uptake.
Stacey, some kind of surprising news this week. The New York Times reported about some sexual abuse allegations against a labor leader, Farm Workers Union, the guy who founded it, Cesar Chavez, a person that a lot of people really look up to, especially in Arizona. He was born in Yuma, did a lot of his work in Arizona and California. I don't want to get too much into the details of it because they've been reported elsewhere, but it seems like this has hit a lot of people really, really hard.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is – be careful of the worship of your idols, right? You don't never want to meet your idols, as they say. The impact reverberated through the Democratic community and the labor community in particular, and I am so proud of how swiftly we've reacted. I mean, this is get the statues down, get the billboards down, get the holidays renamed, cancel the parade. And it is, we believe victims and we're supporting the victims, and the boulevard needs to be renamed, and it's that fast.
Well, so Chuck, Stacey mentioned the holiday. Arizona has a state holiday coming up at the end of this month. Senate President Warren Peterson says that he believes the legislature, they're going to vote on this next week in a committee to repeal the holiday, which is a different approach than a place, for example, like California has taken, where they're looking to rename the holiday, I think like Farm Workers Day or something, instead of Cesar Chavez Day. What do you make of the idea of just repealing it as opposed to maybe, honoring sort of the movement as opposed to the man?
It's a great political play by Warren. I mean, it certainly puts the governor in the box, right? You repeal it, she's got to sign the legislation to repeal it. Whereas I would tend to agree with what Governor Newsom has done is honor the idea. I mean, as Stacey just said, I mean, we're all flawed, right? We know this. I mean, we've gone through this discussion with Thomas Jefferson. We've gone through this conversation with George Washington. We've done this. Everybody's a sinner, loud and clear. So we've now named a holiday over a man with deep flaws. So just change the name of the holiday. I mean, that, to honor laborers, honor farm workers. We still need visa reform on farm workers. There's all kinds of things we need done in that category. So let's use the opportunity to refocus. But, that doesn't happen appropriately in our political realm.
Stacey, do you agree that if this gets to the governor, she's got to sign it?
Oh, I think she absolutely will. I mean, personally, I'd love for her to come up with another holiday and right. suggest that it gets renamed. But the governor is a social worker, and she certainly understands the impact sexual violence, domestic violence, abuse like this has on an entire community. And you cannot deny this. I mean, Dolores Huerta is the one telling the story. You cannot deny what happened.
Yeah. And she told it pretty strongly in that post she made. An interesting series of lawsuits this week between the Attorney General, Chris Mayes, and the predictive market platform, Kalshi. This is where you can sort of place money on who's going to win an election or who is going to attend the Super Bowl or if we're going to bomb another country, for example. And Chuck, there's been a lot of sort of controversy about this kind of platform. Kalshi is not the only one out there. I'm curious what you make of sort of the Kalshi sued the state to sort of allow them to allow itself to continue to operate. The Attorney General sued them saying they're violating state laws.
They are. I mean, it's not legal under the gaming compact that the state has negotiated with the tribes, the Native American tribes, nor is it legal under the online gaming compact that Governor Ducey signed with all of the professional sports teams.
The sports betting stuff.
Yeah, sports betting stuff. So it has no venue within state statute to authorize it. So Chris is right to do that. But then the question becomes, okay, since it's a popular site, do you legalize it? I'm all for it. Let's legalize and tax. I was critical of Ducey for not including anything, any revenue for the state in all of that stuff. And it's huge markets. I mean, I was reading numbers on it the other day that are just mind-blowing.
It's like billions of dollars.
And you could grab a small piece of that and fund education for poor kids. You know, you could do
expand the voucher program to adults.
Right. Or you could subsidize the health care with a state subsidy on health care for everybody that's getting thrown off of the Affordable Care Act. I mean, there's a lot of things the state needs money on.
Does the fact that the fact of Arizona's gaming compacts, does that maybe put Arizona in a slightly different position than other states when they're looking at potentially outlawing this kind of thing?
I mean, I remember when we did the original compacts, you know, California had done one. So I think every state has some type of legalized format. It's up to the states.
They might
all
be a little bit different.
These. Right. And they would be different. But it's up to the state to sanction any activity. It's a federalist issue.
So, Stacey, as Chuck said, this is a huge market.
Yeah.
People bet lots of money on all sorts of things. Or as Kalshi might say, they buy contracts on all sorts of things that might happen in the future. Chris Mayes, of course, is running for re-election this year. Is this the kind of issue that will maybe play well with voters, not play well with voters if she's going after this?
So to Chuck's point, we're leaving so much money on the table by not including this in a taxed and regulated environment. And there's a limitless way to separate a fool from his money, right? This is part of that. Us saying you can't do that in Arizona doesn't mean people aren't doing that in Arizona. You've got your VPN on your phone, you're making bets. I mean, sports betting, part of the sports betting evolution in Arizona was that we knew millions of dollars was getting bet daily from consumers in Arizona on sports, but they weren't running it through a taxed and regulated environment. So I think this is, to Chuck's point, this is a policy discussion, betting on weird stuff, what time, you know, whether or not you're going to see the sunset or that it's going to be cloudy or whatever these things are, that's going to happen anyway. So just get it into a regulated environment and use the money for good.
Is there a difference, do you think? And of course, I'm going to stipulate that none of us in this room are lawyers. Is there a difference between betting, for example, on whether you're going to see the sunset or it's going to be cloudy or who's going to win the game, which a lot of people sort of have a say in the outcome versus, you know, are we going to go to war with somebody, which basically
that's
one person has a say in the outcome, or, you know, things like that where, you know, one person kind of can dictate whether or not a lot of people win or lose a lot of money.
Certainly. But that's been the issue since the dawn of betting. I mean, literally since the dawn of humanity. We're talking about Chicago Black Sox stuff. I mean, we're talking about throwing games and throwing spreads and missing the last shot.
Bring it forward to the most recent nomination, the Oscar nominations. you know, wasn't there a report that there was a huge influx of money at the last minute on Michael B. Jordan to win the best actor nomination?
Best actor, okay.
Because somebody knew. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody has to know. And so they're throwing money down on things that are not unknown, to your point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that becomes the issue of regulatory. That should be a regulatory atmosphere instead of, you know, unless you want to just sanction as the law of the land, separating fools from their money.
Well, that in theory would kind of, Stacey, to your point about the Black Sox, would allow regulators to put into law or into ordinance rules about not throwing
punitive,
a game, yep, or not saying, oh, look, I'm going to bet on, you know, this country doing something, or the president doing something, or the mayor doing something, and the mayor seeing that and saying, okay, I'm going to do it, and then you give me a cut.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. If there has to be a penalty for rigging the game in life in general, I don't think we're there right now at all.
No, we're getting extraordinarily good at rigging the game.
Yeah, far, far away from that. But I don't know who the equipment manager is that decides whether or not the Gatorade's orange or yellow at the Super Bowl. But I make that bet. And someone already knows. Somebody's mixed the little juggies. So, I mean, somebody knows.
Is that really something you can bet on, the color of the Gatorade?
That's my favorite bet on the Super Bowl. It's what color the Gatorade is on that gets dumped on the coach's head.
Wow. Yeah. That is quite something.
Stacey, not that I gamble about.
No, it's for entertainment purposes only. Just a couple minutes left. Stacey, I want to ask you about Larry Sabato, who is a well-known sort of prognosticator. He and his crystal ball moved the Arizona governor's race from a toss-up to leans Democratic, which I think for a lot of people is maybe a bit of a surprise. Are you surprised?
I am not surprised. We have a governor who was elected by crossing the aisle and getting independents to vote for her. I mean, even if every Democrat voted for her and half the independents, she would have lost. She's not turned any of those voters off. And given the national climate, she's in fact picking up independents who are saying, can you just be – she's normal. She's not embarrassing. She doesn't do anything weird. She's running the government. She's vetoing crazy bills. Let's keep status quo.
Chuck, are you surprised by this?
A little. But I think it's attributable to Operation Epic Fury, which is now the daily charge of the Trump administration to create daily fury. I think people are getting exhausted by that. His numbers amongst, as the aforementioned, unaffiliated voters are falling off the table. Stacey's absolutely correct. I mean, in order for the governor to win, she has to have a coalition of the electorate. What I would remind people, though, and that I'd sort of second guess Mr. Sabato here, is there is an independent in this race who's going to be in the race, who's going to get, let's just say conservatively, 5 to 10% of the vote. Where's that vote come from? I argue it comes off of the governor because, hey, Carrie Lake got 48% of the vote. That's a low bar for Biggs, or I assume to be the Republican nominee. And so that creates this really competitive atmosphere that I don't think a lot of people outside of the state 48 are really contemplating.
Well, so Stacey, very quickly before we have to wrap up, how big of a concern for the governor should the Arizona Independent Party candidate be?
I don't think I disagree with Chuck in where this pulls from. I think it pulls from Republicans. It's the people who are lifelong Republicans who voted for Trump once or twice, who are frustrated with the situation. They're going to vote for the independent. They're not going to cross all the way over. So I think she's in very good shape. And I don't know if this independent candidate goes the distance. Everybody thinks that they can self-fund, and every rich guy has a dream of writing those checks. And then by the time you're writing a second or third $1 million check and you've got 4% of the vote, you start to recalculate.
Interesting. All right. We'll have to leave it there.
We can go to the poly market and figure it out.
Entertainment purposes only, folks. And can't bet on elections in Arizona. Stacey Pearson, Chuck Coughlin, thanks to you both. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.